All right, Ops Kings fans.
Cue the intro.
Cue the intro. Tony and I were talking a couple of days ago, and what I've been working on is like, how do we make marketing sawdust from the stuff that we're already doing? We realize we're already having a lot of these conversations between Tony and I about ideas to improve our own business and things that happen, or like riffing on ideas for our clients' businesses. Figured we would share these conversations with you. So hopefully you enjoy this. The thing that prompted this conversation today is I talked to a founder yesterday, and he's got a team. I think they're maybe a little bit under $1 million per year. But despite the fact that he has a team, the founder is still like answering Slack messages from clients. He's still doing all the client calls. He has somebody who is an account manager in the company. And this has happened a number of times where the founders are too heavily involved in the client comms than they need to be for the money they're spending on the team, for the offers they have, and for what they could be doing. And so I have a few notes I've got of concepts that we have implemented in our own company to do this. And today is going to be riffing on that a little bit. So excited for that. Maybe we could start with where Ops Kings has come from, because when we started 2 years ago, it was me and Tony doing all the client calls, all the sales calls, all the Slack communication, everything. We would joke that we would be happy when somebody wouldn't show up for a sales call because we would finally have time to like actually work on
this. We were actually
really, really happy with that. The way that I think about this, I don't know if you would agree, Tony, but like I think about how can we segment deep work? Because like the more time you have to focus and I have to focus on growing the business, the more the business will grow, and things like having to be interrupted with a Slack message takes away from that, even if the Slack message is like a couple minutes. So that's where we were. We got to, for us, like we're what? I mean, maybe I'll do like a couple of client calls per month at this point, because our team handles it. Maybe you wanted to start with like, tell me, or like, let's riff a little bit on what you learned from Dan Martell, specifically 10-80-10. Because I think that's kind of where our delegation started. So share a little bit about what you learned from Dan Martell and 10-80-10.
Yeah, so I know Dan Martell mentioned a 10-80-10 concept in his book. I think he says that he stole it from somewhere else. So it could be another thing. But this concept of the 10-80-10 is very frequent and very common in the consulting industry. So for us, that was sort of like the connecting line of why I wanted to implement it with us, since we're a consulting company. And the 10-80-10 concept basically states that when you're starting off delegation, the way you should approach it is 10% of the initial ideation and the direction, basically the first 10% of the relationship of where a specific client engagement should go, should be determined by you when you're starting off the engagement. And then the 80%, the following, right? So after the first initial, once you set the direction, once you set the goals, once you set sort of the hypothesis that needs to happen, the 80% of the work should then be handled by someone who's the person you delegated stuff to. And what that allows is that you still have the experience to set the direction and the goals and the hypothesis that's, you know, relevant, but the 80% of them sort of like actually clicking the buttons and actually doing the work gets done by the team, where like the bulk of the work actually happens, gets done by your team. And then finally, the last 10% in the 10-80-10 is the last final review that you do to actually make sure that the initial hypothesis has been actually worked on properly and you've gotten the result and the outcome that you want. So like if you think about a deliverable or like a website or, you know, a design brief, if you're a senior designer, you would be the one who's sort of giving the designing brief direction that you want to go. You would give the colors, you would give the sort of, you know, the style guide that you want your team to follow. But then the designers would be the people who are actually going to build out the entire thing. And then you, as the most senior person, again, at the last 10%, you would go like, hey, actually, let's just make a small tweak here. let's just make a small tweak there because that was my vision. And by doing that, what you do is you keep the consistency and the quality of the work as if you were doing it, and you do it for only 20% of your total energy.
So it's
a very effective way of starting to delegate some of the work to your team without risking the quality of the work to actually suffer, right? And in the consulting world, the way this happens is the partner usually, right? So when a relationship happens, when a partner kind of brings in a new deal, the partner is the one who sort of starts off with the hypothesis of what he thinks is the right thing to do to, you know, solve this case in particular. And then the consultants sort of do their grunt work. They do all their client interviews and all of that stuff. They, you know, spend all the all-nighters making decks and stuff like that. And then the partner at the end sort of like looks at the deck and says like, hey, please, please fix this. Please fix that before it's good to go. Make sure it's perfect. And then they present it. So you still get the, you know, consulting is an amazing example of this because you still get the, you know, the price tag of, you know, millions of dollars, but it's actually just 23 and 24 year olds who just got out of college, but they can charge millions of dollars because they package it well around the most senior people in their company. So the end result is still good.
Yeah. And I think the big thing that, so here's like one thing that I noticed, right? So, one of my fears in delegating, like the, well, like developers were one of the first roles that we had in our company. And I was at first super nervous about the quality suffering. I was like, oh no, like the, I do a really good job and somebody else is like not going to do as well as me. One of the things that I notice is first off, like, yeah, there's some people we've hired that are like, it's definitely, it would definitely be better if we just got rid of them, and we did, right? But over time, because I wasn't doing that middle 80%, I was able to focus more of my time and mental energy on the first 10% and the last 10% and increase our total reps. So we've done, like, so this is an example for us. We've done company brains for just over 100 clients now. We have done about 3,000 or 4,000 features. And because of those extra reps, our team is now way better than I was. And so by giving yourself the middle 80% free, you get dramatically better as a company. So for you, actually, one thing I'm curious about for you is like, what were you worried about when relinquishing some control of the calls? Because I know we had that for the dev side, but like it was a whole other thing. I had to kind of I had to like force you a little bit. I was like, "Yo, like Steven at the time, like the owner of these calls, like you can't be the host of the call anymore."
Yeah.
What were some of the things that were going through your head? And we can talk through like some of the systems that we put in place to like keep oversight over quality. While still removing ourselves from like saving the interruption. So, but before you made that transition, what were you worried about?
Yeah. So I think subconsciously the reason why I was hesitant, to do this is you sort of own the client relationship, right? It's sort of hard to let go of a client. Yeah. It's your baby, right? You've been handling that client for 6 months and, you know, when we were starting, you were sort of handling the dev side. I was handling the sort of client relationship side. And Steven was brought on. Steven was starting to get comfortable doing these calls. And Steven was probably at a point where he could comfortably do the calls, but I had trouble letting them go. And I think the reason why that happened is at that time, I didn't have a clear path of how do I take a kind of completely brand new person, insert them with a client, and have the client be able to build up enough trust with that new person where the client starts to point and kind of gravitate naturally towards that person instead of me, because that person just has more bandwidth and energy and headspace and skill to serve them better than I do.
Yeah.
And I think at first it sort of required a very hard cut. You know, Steven was at that point for a while, but I, you know, for one reason or the other, I had hesitancy in actually pulling through. So in the process of us going through those reps, we developed the sort of like the staging of taking a new person and inputting them in an existing client relationship. With new client relationship, it wasn't a problem. Like if we onboarded the new client, we plugged it right into the business analyst that was new. It was like the client doesn't know any better, right? So that relationship went fine. I didn't have the hesitancy, but existing client relationship is the one that I had a lot of friction on. And then we built up the all right, perfect. We have an L0, the person who's, you know, just on a call, just saying hi, just getting some FaceTime with the client, not really responsible or actually pulling back on saying anything, because at this point, they're probably only going to say some stupid things, no matter how good, right? No matter how smart they are, no matter how good your recruiting process is. They just don't have the context of the client, of their business model, of your process, et cetera. So the only thing they can say are stupid things. So basically, on L0 for us is like, hey, you're just on a call.
Just watch.
You're just there to say hi.
Just be a face. You're just
there to get some FaceTime with the client and just get kind of get into the groove of how this happens. And then, you know, after a couple of weeks, you're ready to become what's called an L1, right? And an L1 is a person who's now able to start to handle Slack communication, right? They're now able to handle written communication because it's not instant. They don't need to come up with the answer on the fly, right? So like a client can ask a question. They have time to research an answer to that question, ask their colleagues in order to provide a good answer. But in the reason why we do that as a small stepping stone is, number one, it builds confidence for the person that's answering the question. But the most important thing, it builds confidence in the client that, hey, this brand new person I didn't know about 2 weeks ago has the capacity to get thoughtful,
well,
good quality.
Hold on, the other, okay, so the other, the real, okay, so like the actual reason, or one of the reasons for me anyway, is selfishly, like, I love the level system. So the problem was happening, and this is a problem that we've run into as we've just hired like more and more and more people. The problem that happens is you bring on a new person and you teach them like everything. You teach them like your whole process, and they start to like try to help in places, which is what you want. But if they help in a place that they're not skilled enough to provide accurate value in, they're not helping, right? So what was happening to me is I would like, we had a couple client relationships where I was like, okay, like you can start helping, and they would start to try to help in like the wrong places. And then also there was simpler places where everyone wants to do like the fun, complicated stuff, right? But if you have a new person, you have to, everybody kind of admits like, listen, this new person is kind of useless in a broad sense.
For a while.
And so what I realize is like, oh, if I need to kind of clearly define, like, you can fully own this one area. And there was like a micro 10-80-10 in that one area. And that was saving me. Like, we basically segmented off like Slack communication, because there's a lot of like administrative stuff to send, like a Monday, Friday update and answer the Slack messages or whatever. So what we did was, I said, okay, if you're a level one, you own the Slack channels, and you own the Slack channels, and that involves post call messages, pre call agendas, Monday, Friday updates. You prepare them and you send them. We have like an internal channel for every client. So we'd have a level one, like send the messages in the internal channel. And then also basically like they're responsible for everything, but they have to check with the level two before, if they have a question or like to send certain things. And so that to me was super helpful, because all of a sudden I had a person helping that was actually helpful, and I could fully relax and say, okay, cool. Like the Slack channels are sorted. I don't have to worry about looking at the Slack channels. Like, cause I know that part, but like, I still have the assurance for me that the quality will be high. So I could relax while still getting a good result. And
but
that's
it's also important. It seems like stupid simple, like, oh, we have a person answering Slack messages. Like that can be done by anyone. But like what it does for the client is the calls are still ongoing. The person is still joining the call. They can see their name. But all of a sudden, this person is starting to become useful for them, right? So the client is starting to build trust in that L1.
Right.
Like, so, hey, this person that I see on the call, he's listening. He's sending over the agenda, the notes. Like, he's taking notes. He, like, understands what we're talking. Like, he's an active listener. So when I ask a question in Slack, he's the one giving me an answer. Cool. I'm starting to build trust. The client, like, starts to build trust that this person is competent. This person has the information. They might be new, but, like, they're an active participant in this relationship.
And also you, like the owner of the business, like what we do, like the benefit of having somebody own Slack first before they're owning a call is you can look at what they type in Slack and you could say like, hey, can you edit this message? Like just, you know, you reference like a question and a link that you sent prior, like recopy the link, like little things like that. Whereas like owning a call is live, and so it's a bit more
dicey. It's like the time delay.
It's the time delay, right? So doing something live is like much harder than doing something like async. The other one too is like here's one trick that we do is we have our business analyst prep a call agenda. And so if you're trying to hire on a new client facing person, have them write the agenda before. Because if you have a written, if you don't have a written agenda before the call, oh man, you are like next level screwed. An owner of a company wouldn't be next level screwed, but a new person, you don't know what they're going to say. Like if they don't have an agenda, they don't have any structure for the call, and they're going to riff, and it's going to be bad. So that's one change that we made as well. So then, and then level two kind of like owns the relationship.
The progression from level one to level two is this person can now be on calls and handle like call communication, which means they can now be on calls. There might not at this point, they're still maybe not fully leading the conversation, but they're definitely productive. They're answering questions. They're handling the project management stuff. They're handling a lot of the questions, the day to day. They might not handle the strategic conversations of the account, but they're handling most of the day to day that's happening within calls, which means they have all the context of the project management situation. They have all the context of what the client's working on, what their goals are, et cetera. And they can provide that information to the client and, you know, take requests. Yeah. They're an order taker, right? They can take requests. They can log those, get them done, and report back to the client in calls as well, right? And that's also super useful because then it allows, you know, the more senior people who are responsible for the strategy of the account and how the overall account is sort of moving to not focus on that. And again, just like we did with Slack, it's like, hey, if you can handle Slack, awesome. That's more bandwidth to the manager or sort of the owner. And then, hey, if you manage Slack and you manage the day-to-day project management and the calls, now there's even more time and bandwidth for the senior manager or the owner of the company to then kind of focus on the strategic aspect of the account, right? So that's the L2. It's like L0 is like you're just there. You're not saying anything. You're silent. L1 is like you're handling written communication. L2, you're handling calls. And then basically the way that you know an L2 is ready to become an L3, which is like a full-on strategic owner effectively of the account, is that the client stops asking for who used to be the strategic owner. The client just stops referring to who used to be the account manager, who used to be the owner of the account, and they start referring to that L2. That's how you know the person is ready to become an L3 because they've started to provide so much value to the client. And they can have an effect on the strategic like direction of the client, even without the input of the senior person. And that's how you know you're ready. You're ready for them to sort of kind of step into the role of an L3.
Yeah, yeah. So the point, I guess, we share this because this is something that we had to go through. Okay, so one of the things I wanted to talk about as well is like, okay, so you can everybody listening, you can define your own levels, but like the level thing was really was very helpful for us. The way that we actually implement the 10-80-10 on a like a broad relationship level is me and our senior business analyst do our company brain process and like our initial scoping, initial design. So, and we have our most senior developer do the prototype, the clickable prototypes that we can show the client, hey, this is the exact system that we want to implement. It's going to look exactly like this with this color scheme and its navigation and all these exact graphs. And then our team like implements it, makes it all happen, right? With put in the API key here and make all the code work here. The other thing that so here's one thing that we had in place. So about a year and a half ago, we had two business analysts that were like managing the day to day, and what we put up in place a system that I want you to talk about because I think it's still valuable. So you're going to get to a point where you have like senior people that are managing the day to day. But if you're like us, you're going to have a case where like after like 6 to 12 months, you start to see the strategy like veer a little bit off of where you would have maybe put it. And you only notice this problem like after it's a long-term problem, not a short-term problem. So one of the things that you suggested, which I really like is, and actually we stole this from, a consultant that we had helping us out who had experience like enterprise telecom, right? So he suggested two things. One was a monthly partner check-in, which is just like, hey, yeah, even though you have the a senior person who's managing the day-to-day, you still have a second person come in like every so often on a cadence just to make sure like the overall strategic direction is still exactly where you want it to be. Yeah. And just to make sure it isn't like slow.
Check on like, are there any kind of very important changes happening on the business side of the client unrelated to us?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because like the person that's handling the point of contact from the client side, the point of contact from our side, they might not be aware of like what's happening on the high level. The high level,
oh, sure.
level of the business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They might be going through an extensive growth phase. Their revenue might be crushed. Yeah. The new competitor is just like, they don't know, right?
Yeah. These sometimes we're talking to like the operations director or something.
Right.
But because we get that role is delegated on the client side as well. But sometimes like the owner of that company there's bigger strategic moves in play. This just happened where earlier this week, you were talking to the owner of a client of ours. They run a huge publishing company, and you kind of like hopped on. And like the benefit of having this as well is not just like strategic direction, but it's a second set of eyes who's not familiar with the minutia to then step back and ask bigger questions. So the question that like in this example, you talked to the owner of the company. You said, "Hey, like." He was saying, oh yeah, like this system you guys put in place for the main fulfillment system is like amazing. We have all this extra capacity. And he said, oh yeah, so now what I want to do is like load up the this like CSM role with more clients, right? And because you weren't involved in the day-to-day, you were able to sit back and go like, yeah, but I mean, do you have a problem with unit economics? Like, is this actually a thing, or is this the big win? Right. And, you know, like long story short, the owner of the company was like, oh, actually our unit economics are perfectly fine. What I really want to do is extend LTV. So the reason we implemented the monthly partner check-in and we call like a QBR, so quarterly business review, is to have these third party, hey, I don't know all the details, but like, let me just come and ask like dumber obvious, business level strategic, yeah, like the kind of the obvious questions that like, people that are in the weeds maybe don't see right away. Yeah. So that's been really helpful for us. And I think that if people were worried about a relationship going off the rails, the level one to level, like multiple, like level zero, level one, level two, level three system is great for that in the micro, but in the macro, you're still going to need as a kind of partner level to check in on the client every so often. And then eventually what we're planning on doing, and we're not here yet, but what we're planning on doing then is having like the our senior business analyst or like another strategic person in the company replace you on those calls. Cause that's again how you scale is like having the multiple levels and have people either ascend through the levels or having like a different skill set where it kind of splits off. So that's been really good. One thing as well that I wanted to, I think is important to talk on is like, we've talked about management systems. Let's talk about the tech side. And, or do you want to go tech or do you want to go, cause like the inbox and things like that is super critical for all this working well. Do you want to talk about tech or do you want to talk about how to hire these people in the first place?
Yeah, let's do tech.
Okay. Cool.
We've riffed on ops.
So one of the things that we noticed, right? So we had kind of delegated the business analyst role. And so Tony and I were not like day to day handling things, but if you give a person a bunch of things to manage and a bunch of things to keep track of. And this is, I think, especially true with client facing people. Because for us, our business analysts, they're kind of like project managers and they're managing like a lot of different things. It's not no single task takes a lot of time, but there's lots of like little things to keep track of. So there's, have we responded quickly in Slack? Are there any features that are that are like the dev team needs information from? Are there any features where we need information from the client? Are there any features where ready to ship? So we have, and this will be true for any business, like we have the dev team does the work, or the team does the work, and then our business analyst or like a client facing account manager would like tell the client and explain the new thing to the client, right? So there's a lot of like little things to keep track of. And so one of the things that I was initially frustrated by until I figured this out is I was having to constantly remind people like, hey, how come this one thing was forgotten about? How come this other thing was forgotten about? We had a really, and still do have like a very good operating system with interfaces for them to see all these things. But there was too many plates to spin. And so what we ended up doing is we implemented like a system where they would take a screenshot of, we call it an inbox. So it's one screen that has like very, very high level, a list of clients. And then like we have a subjective happiness score, and like, do we have enough scope, and are they overloaded, underloaded? What plan are they on? Are they paid up? Whatever else. And so the idea is, a screen where our team can take a screenshot of that screen, and if everything is green, we're like, okay, cool. Like their work for that day is done.
Handled. They've done everything that they
kind of like on. They got to inbox zero. Right. And so I share this because this system of having an inbox, what it also does is it is like, it's an accountability system. It's there when they take a screenshot and share that in Slack. It's like, it's them saying, hey, I've done I've gotten to the point where I'm done for the day. And so I'd say like on the tech side, practically speaking, we use a relational database with a interface for this. And then Slack, just they share a screenshot, they paste it in Slack saying like, basically I'm done for the day.
Yeah.
And so their team, everybody else in the team can see that as well.
A simple, stupid non-tech, like if you have a system and you're like not into like ripping everything apart and kind of building a new system, a super non-tech version of doing this is to create like an end of day checklist for your team, which is like, yeah, hey, I have like where they like check a box and basically need to trust them on their word to say like, yes, I have replied to all of my clients' messages. Yes, I have, you know, moved all the tasks that need my QA into the next status. Yes, I have, you know, shipped all the deliverables that are ready to the, and you can create like a 5-point, 10-point checklist.
You can do honor system. And then the tech way of doing it is like you have an automation that checks the Slack channels that says, hey, like this message like was forgotten about. And so you can use tech to, I think what's important is like, first off, the system is that, and you can use tech to catch errors in the system and to show like objectively, hey, this one thing is actually ready to be shipped, but it hasn't been, or this one thing is actually stuck and to prevent people forgetting or potentially bad actors, right, in your team. So that's cool.
I want you, Ryan, to share the story, because I think the inbox, we kind of found a way how to do it internally through trial and error. But I think I know the story of how when you worked in Switzerland and how you basically traveled all of Europe for free with a version of the inbox where you showed it to your management like, hey, I've done everything.
So the story is a long, long time ago in a land far away, I worked for an engineering company. Actually, I'm in Toronto now, but I worked for an engineering company in the Toronto area, and I was working on a project in Switzerland. So I was flying back and forth to Switzerland all the time. And what our company was responsible for, this is for a project for Nestle at an infant formula factory in the mountains of Switzerland. I was building the analytics system to gather data from all these machines built by like about a dozen different vendors. So there's like all these European vendors. And so I would travel to Switzerland and say, dear engineering company number one, you have these 10 machines you're building the code for. I need to hook up like this data point, this data point, this data point. So what I needed to get was, I had to keep track of all these things. And so I had a massive spreadsheet that I had. It was all the machines and the vendor for the machine and the tech stack that was used for the machine, the IP address. And then it was just like columns on the spreadsheet of, whether it was a deliverable the vendor needed to provide to me or whether it was work that I needed to do for them. And I kind of like built this spreadsheet where it was just tracking like how far along is it. And I would show this, I built this for myself, but what happened over time was I would travel to Switzerland and every canton in Switzerland has a different bank holiday system. Cause some of them are like in the Italian part, some of them are in their French part, the German part, whatever. And so sometimes I would get to Switzerland and I would have like 2 days worth of work and then I would just be done for like the rest of the time. But my colleagues were still there. And so I kind of said to Nestle, I was like 26. And I said, hey, like, I'm done. Like everything, like there's nothing literally I can do here because I'm caught up. I'm waiting for all these other vendors to do their work or like this person's on holiday or whatever. And I said, two options, either I can, stick around, you know, I've got like a week of like nothing to do. Right. So I can stick around in Switzerland and eat expensive Swiss food and stay in an expensive Swiss hotel and bill you like just to chill and drink coffee all day. Or you can pay for my trip to Morocco because the trip to Morocco and like hotels in Morocco are cheaper and food in Morocco is much cheaper than here. And so I, long story short, I used that first. I got them to pay for a trip to Istanbul and then Rome and then Barcelona and back to Switzerland. I did another time where this happened multiple times. Another time I got them to pay for a trip to Morocco and back. So I spent a week in Morocco. And another time I had them pay for a trip to Austria. So I like hung out in the Alps of Austria at this hostel in Austria. You know, because I was being economical and saving them money. Right. So it was basically like unequivocal proof that it's beneficial to do this versus that. Yep. So and then that kind of evolved into like the inbox, right?
That's the concept. That's effectively
the concept is your team, something where your team can show you like, listen, like it's handled, like everything is handled. And it gives you so much confidence that like everything is in control. And now what we do is the inbox concept for us started with like the client facing role for us. Because that's the role for us where there's like, there's more to juggle. Right. And then now every single role in our company has their own inbox right now is like you and I are spinning up like sales teams and marketing teams. We're going to like the inbox concept will be there and the exact numbers we track will be different. But like what we kind of have is a bunch of numbers on the screen and those numbers go down to zero. And so if you can have your team send you a screenshot of inbox zero, that, it's been a concept. Shout out to Ralph who kind of figured out the mechanism, initially. And then I think it was about a year and a half ago where, I basically realized we had a business analyst who was underperforming and I realized that he didn't have one simple place to go to make sure there was nothing he was forgetting about.
Yeah. He checked all the boxes.
So it's a great concept. The other thing in terms of tech that we should talk about is, and we talked to a marketing company, maybe it was a few months ago, but one very common thing that we see is companies where they're doing too many calls and on the call, they're explaining all these things that could be sent async. And so one of the things I think in terms of making client relationships, getting the founder out of client relationships, reporting is super huge. So this is I think you remember this example client where they were basically doing like a status call or they were doing a client like report thing every single week. And on the call, they were sharing all these things on the call.
Yeah.
And so one of the things, if you're not already doing it, is what you can make is like in whatever system you're using, make a screen per client. You can filter by client or whatever. Or if you want to get fancy, I know we've done like a lot of client portals where someone can log in and you get a Slack message saying, hey, your stats for the week already. And they click on the link and log in. One kind of nice thing you could do is think about all the time you're spending on these client calls. and how much the information could be communicated by, like, you make a screenshot and send a screenshot, or you make an automated PDF or send the PDF, or make an automated, like, Slack message and send the Slack message. And then, like, a lot of times what you'll find is your clients don't want to be on calls just to get the update.
Just for the sake of it.
And so you can buy back all that time
and then use that time to
do sales.
One thing we train our team is we basically want the ideal client call to look like is like, hey, we're all caught up on, like, they open the call, they say the agenda, we need to go through project management updates, and then I want to discuss ABC. We basically want the project management updates to be like, hey, send everything over in Slack. Here's proof that everything's, you know, being handled. You know, 2-3 minutes tops. The client's like, awesome, we've got that out of the way. And then the rest of the call is just strategic, bringing value to the client.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then, like, regardless if, you know, I can hear already the arguments like, oh, yeah, but we're very human-centric, and for us it's very important that people
are super high touch.
I get it. But, like, I'm pretty sure the client would much rather have you be organized on the project management side and know that everything's handled asynchronously. You get on a call, two-minute check just to show them that everything's fine, and then spend the rest of the call talking about their business, strategy, marketing, whatever your service is. I can guarantee you that's the case. So you can still be high touch. I'm just saying that the ratio in which of the call you spend handling the day-to-day versus strategic is very kind of important, and also shows how organized you are as a vendor as well. Because, like, if 80% of your calls, 80% of the time on your call is just like the day-to-day, or 100% of your call is just like, we're building this is behind, I need your input on this, I need your input on that. Like, that call to the client is just like, oh yeah, this is like homework. It's
completely, I would not want to hop on that call.
One of the frameworks that we sort of give our business analyst team to have is, like, we always tell them that the weekly call that they do with our clients, for our clients, should be like the favorite call of the week, not because they like us so much, but it's the call that they get to relax. A business owner, a department manager has so much stuff on their plate, has so much stuff they're juggling, people that need to hold accountable, people that report to them, etc. This is the one call, like, we want to be the ideal employee that when they hop on this call, the client in their head subconsciously like, oh, awesome. Like, let me sort of sit back in my chair and let me just, like, be guided through this process by this team.
Yeah.
Like, I know everything. Like, they show me everything's on pace. They show me everything's handled. They show me everything's logged. And then for, like, 45 minutes, we get to talk about my business and they get to consult me. Like, perfect. Like, that to me is, like, the description of a perfect call in our case, right? So for you, it might be different, but that's, like, the idea that if you can do something asynchronously, you should. And I get the argument we want to be very high touch. That means, like, if we handle everything asynchronously for a client in terms of the project management, that doesn't mean we cancel the call. No, that means we just do the call and talk strategy with the client.
Yeah.
We bring value outside of the deliverables.
It's just a better call. It's a better call. Yeah. One of the things that I want to address, because it can, like, sending a pre-call agenda, sending post-call notes, like, that can, there's a lot of, like, admin time that goes into, or, like, if you don't have automations in place, I'll describe how we automate those things. But if you don't have automations in place, then yeah, that can be a lot of work. And that would be one possible reason why you wouldn't do it. I'll share one more thing as well, because I this was a suggestion that you made, I think, like, maybe a year ago or so. And I think it's, like, super, super good. It's the mechanism of, if you have a question or something you need the client's input on that you were planning on doing on the call, you can say in the pre-call agenda something like, hey, I need this information from you. I've booked in a call from, you know, an hour from now. If you get it to me in Slack, I will cancel the call. Yeah. First off, if I got that message, I'd be like, oh, thank God. Like, this is amazing. And so there's a couple, and maybe we can do another, maybe our next episode will be like little communication tricks, that you can train your team on so that they can do a good job or even a better job than you would. And you can relax a little bit and the client service is high. But, like, one of the things is, so we have a relational database, and, you know, we, often now are using, like, Supabase and a custom front end. And what you can do is you have, like, your list of clients. So you have a table of clients, you have a table of all the contacts for those for those clients, stakeholders or whatever. You can have automations that when you onboard a client, it sends a Slack invite to like the couple of main people via email. But then everybody else who joins the Slack channel, like what we do is we automatically log that person. We log their Slack ID. We can see their time zone. Like, oh, this is all automated. And then when you have a call, we have other automations that look at who is attending the call. And, oh, like we have a call with this client on this day. What you can then do is what we have as well is the deliverables in our system. And we can see the status of those deliverables. So then we can auto-generate the agenda for the call. There's also, we don't have time to go into this today, but we have an automation where you can emoji react to something in Slack. And so I know this is one of the things that our team uses where the client will sometimes ask a question that really makes sense to discuss on the call. And so our senior business analyst team, what they do is they'll do like a little, like it's like a little hand emoji or something. And what that does is it logs the message in Slack, or not in Slack, and it puts it in our database. And then that gets automatically added to the list of the agenda for a call. And so what we can do then is take all the features that are in a certain status to say, hey, we need information from these things. We take all the compile all the Slack notes, and you can automatically compile the agenda for the call and generate the text. So you can imagine how an automation or AI, whatever, could generate something like, hey, Tony, we have a call tomorrow, tomorrow morning. Here are the things that I want to talk. I want to go into like discuss this strategic point that we mentioned. There's two features that are blocked, or there's two deliverables that are blocked. Yep. I need your information on them. Here's a link for like the original conversation. And there's two pieces of information, like two API keys I need from you. If you can get me these two things before the call, I can make the call shorter. Right. And that can all be automated. So you can still have the agenda that's super organized and keeps the call tight without your team spending like extra time doing the work. And then having the call agenda shared in Slack gives you the confidence that like it's actually being done. And so that's how we do the call agenda. And then the post call, we have Firefly's call recorder. Join all of our calls, and you can do this with any call recorder. It doesn't have to be Firefly's, but there's a webhook that gets triggered after the call is done, where Firefly sends the transcript. And then what we do is we have an AI that parses the transcript and generates like an executive summary of action items. And then we have another part of that automation. So one part of the automation generates the executive summary. Our team goes in and like finesses it a little bit. So they sometimes AI gets action items wrong if it's sorted already on the call. So they can share the action items. So we mark the call as like the agenda was, or the post call was like sent in Slack. And then we have another AI bot that takes the items discussed on the call and generates like tasks in our system as well. So you can do everything that we're talking about here, where your team is able to manage like a decent chunk of clients without them manually doing all this work. There's automations that can be put in place for all this kind of stuff.
That's and again, for me, it comes down to the principles is like, can you get your team to write up the pre-call agenda manually? And if you can't get your team to write up the pre-call agenda manually, like start with that. And before figuring out how to automate it, like get the basics done first, which is your team sending a pre-call agenda? No. Cool. Get them to send a pre-call agenda.
Yeah.
Figure out what a good pre-call agenda is. Get them to like fill out a checklist to showing you that they've sent a pre-call agenda. Cool. Get consistent with that. Are they sending a post-call? Yeah. Are they sending the post-call message?
Yeah.
Where it's like, here's what we discuss. Here's the action items for you. Here's the action items for us. Let's get them to do that. And then over time, like once you see that is starting to take up a lot of their time, the service is getting better, then you can start thinking about.
Yeah. To be clear, I think this is a really good point. Like a lot of people, they say, oh, like this thing isn't happening at all. If I only had automation, then it would instantly happen. And this is.
You don't know what to automate because you don't have a good example.
You don't have a good example of what to automate as well. And then also like, sometimes your people just suck, and we don't have time to go over our like we have another video breaking down how like our entire hiring process and where we post ads and how we vet people and how many we just did a recent round of hiring, so we have like the actual numbers for how many people applied and where we post the job and all this kind of stuff for client facing people. But one of the things I'll say on this is, even like, we're an automation, like we know automation, we know tech, we know dashboards, all this kind of things. We still, when we're implementing a new system, we still have our team do it fully manually before we decide what to automate. Cause sometimes the process itself isn't something you want to even continue. You also need your team to like understand the importance of this activity and the value it brings, so that if the automation breaks or, you know, Fireflies doesn't join the call or whatever, they still know this is important to do regardless of whether there's an automation that does it for them or not. So, yeah, I think, so that's all, honestly, that was like all of my,
there we go.
That was all my notes for this conversation. Yeah. Welcome
drop,
to another
drop comments below
drop comments what, below on if you like
what
this or
other
insights
topics, questions you have for
yeah
for the next convo. We're going to be trying to post these as much as possible, so try to make this interactive. Me and Ryan always have a bunch of topics to talk about.
We yap every day multiple times a day, and we're going to start recording those conversations because I think it's valuable, or hopefully it's valuable. And if it's not, then screw you guys. I don't care. Like, it's just still fun anyway. I like talking to Tony. So
this was Ops Kings podcast episode 9. We need to get to 21 to officially be within the top 1%
then
of
we'll,
podcasts.
Then we'll be legit. Yeah, then we'll be like legit. We'll be like
thank
the
you.
First million
for
Ops.
This, if you're listening to this, send this to a friend. If you're watching this on YouTube, also send it to a friend. Like, share, subscribe. And we'll catch
blah,
you.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Episode. Brought to you by Athletic Greens.
Awesome.
By 8 Sleep. Yeah. All right.